Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the lottery of all the mighty block.
This episode, we're joined by Angela Chang. Angela is an American Muay Thai fighter, currently living in Bangkok, Thailand. So let's go.
Yeah, just like tell me who you are, how your journey started, and you know what all brought you to where you are now. So okay, let's just get right into it.
And you can cut in, ask me questions at any time, because
yeah,
once
yeah,
I start
yeah.
off, I might just be blah, 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 blah.
That works too, so it's fine.
Okay. So when I was a kid, I watched a lot of martial arts movies with my dad. So we're talking about like Jackie Chan, Bruce Lee, Jean-Claude Van Damme. And then, you know, it's just when you're a kid and then you're exposed to these things, it's natural for you to like want to do it.
Yeah.
So then I remember being like 5 or 6 and being like, Dad, I want to take like Kung Fu or kickboxing or, you know, whatever lessons. And then, you know, my parents are really like traditional, so they're like, oh no, girls don't do that stuff, you know. But then my little brother, who was not interested at all, he got to take like taekwondo lessons. So I remember I was like mad about that for the longest time. I was like, why does he get to do it but not me? Anyway, so then it was always like in the back of my mind to like try martial arts of some sort. It was never on my plan for the martial arts to be Muay Thai specifically.
Okay.
But it just so happened that when I was studying in college and I was working part-time, I had some money, and I was like, might as well just try all the stuff that I wanted to try and I never got to when I was a kid, because now I have my own money and I can just do classes myself. So like kind of like had like an informal list going on. So then I was like, oh, I'm going to try yoga, I'm going to try spin, I'm going to try like CrossFit and, you know, whatever. And then I was like, all right, there's this place that kind of near my house that's having like this deal going on now. It was like one of those I love kickboxing branches, so I was just like, oh well, it's a deal, let me go in and try and see how I like it. And luckily for me, the people who were teaching the classes, they were Muay Thai fighters. They were not like fighters from that gym, they were fighters from Seton, New York in Astoria. I don't know if you've heard of it, but so then they taught there part-time, so then the classes that they ran weren't your like run-of-the-mill, oh, just hit the, you know, whatever. That we actually like held Thai pads for each other and like did drills, the low kick pads and stuff. And I was like, this is amazing, like this is so hard and I love it. Like it was just like from like day one, I was just like, I just wanted to like what's a good term for it? I was just like soaking everything in, like it was just I went in with just the intention to learn, because this was something that I had been like so curious about for so long. So when I got actually like immersed into it, I was like, oh, I just want to keep learning and learning and learning. So then like my first, I think 3 or 4 months, I was there was a point where I only went once a week because I was in school. And then when I had a break from school, I started going every day. And then they were like, wow, you're here every single day. I'm like, yeah, I really like doing this. And then the next logical step for me was like, I liked this so much that I knew that I wanted to become better. So I talked to the trainers there. I was like, hey, I want to become better. And I think the best way for me to become better is to compete. What do you think? They're like, yeah, you definitely like, they're like, you're not at the level now, but they're like, but you definitely have like the qualities to potentially become a fighter. And they're like, this isn't the place for you. So why don't you come to where we train? So then later that, I think 10 months or 11 months into my journey, I started training at Seton. And then training at Seton was just like, I was from a I love kickboxing environment, and I went to like a fighter's gym. And it was just like, whoa. I guess it's like the equivalent of like, you just training like as like a hobbyist in America. All of a sudden you're dumped with like the Thai fighters in Thailand. People who were only training for like 2-3 months were like kicking ass and sparring, and I was like, what's going on here? I was not expecting this, but you know, I loved it. I was like, oh, this is the place where I need to be to become better. And then I think I started training Seton sometime in like August 2012, 2012, and then in June 2013, I had my first amateur fight. So, yeah, so that was pretty exciting. I just remember, like, oh, this is what I wanted for so long, and I can't believe it's actually happening. And I just remember, like, that whole fight cam, I, like, wanted to do everything to, like, wanted to do everything right. So whatever advice that the longtime fighters had, then they gave me, I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. Oh, this is how you lose. Like, okay, I'm going to do that. Oh, this is what you have to do in training and after training. I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. So I did everything. And then I had my first amateur fight, and everything that people say about, like, you know, the tunnel vision, the muscle memory, you not being able to breathe, you not being able to hear, it was true. It was all true for me. I remember that first round, I didn't breathe, I didn't hear anything. I was like, what actually happened? I had my second amateur fight a few months after that, and then I took a break because I had some personal issues to work through. And then a couple years later, I had my third and fourth amateur fight. And then that same year, at the end of the year, I took my first trip over here to Thailand. I came with Aziz. I came with a couple of people that I trained with. And this was the very, very end of 2015. So right before the new year of 2016. Okay. So we went. We stayed at, you know, for three and a half weeks, and that was when I was just like, oh, I get it. I get why people love being here and why people come back, like, every 6 months, like, once, twice, three times a year. Like, I get it now. Like,
yeah,
it's not just about the Muay Thai. It was like, the people here are nice, the weather is nice, there's just less in general to stress and worry about. Things are more accessible here. Like, I don't have to think twice before just hopping into a taxi and, like, getting the taxi driver to just, like, go somewhere for an hour. But if I was in New York, no way I'm taking a taxi. That's, like, my entire day's, like, wages. You know? Yeah. So everything here was just, like, so much. I just felt like I could really just kind of work on growing myself as a person and doing the things that I want to do, aside from just the stuff that I was supposed to do back home. Because, you know, up until then, I was just like, oh yeah, you have to do this, you have to go to, you have to graduate at this time, you have to get this degree, and then you have to work, and you have to pay off your bills, blah, 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 blah. But then there was no time for me to do the things that I wanted. And then I just felt like, even at, like, my early 20s, I just felt, like, so suffocated. I was like, this isn't how I want to live my life for the rest of whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So then during my first day there, I was like, oh, I really want to come back here and find a way to make this work. Like, I want to, like, work from a computer and train and fight, at least for, like, a short amount of time, and just see what it's like, and then come back, and then at least I could say I did it. And then it just so happened that at that time, they were looking for something. I was looking for a social media manager. So they were looking for someone to stay there for 6 months and help them out with their Facebook, Instagram, maybe with, like, the customer relations and stuff, because they didn't really have anyone there for an extended period I can speak English and, like, help take people around. So then I went home, and then 3 weeks later I came back to Thailand. Yeah, so that's pretty much how I got started here. I came with the intention of just, like, okay, I'm gonna be here for 6 months, I'm gonna train and fight as much as I can, and that was it. Like, I'm just gonna learn as much as I can. But then when the 6 months was almost up, I was like, I feel like I just started, like, just started learning. I was like,
yeah,
there's still so much left. So I was like, I gotta stay longer. So I stand in for another 6 months. So at the end of next month, it will be 5 years.
Wow. That's,
yeah,
like, have you come back at all?
I've come back to visit maybe, like, a week or a few weeks at, like, a time, maybe once a year or something,
yeah,
but never, like, come back for extended periods, because even when I leave Bangkok, like, I'm just like, I want to go back to Bangkok and just train. And,
no, I know. Yeah, I get, like, anxious getting on the plane or even booking the trip to leave. Like, I get, like, I don't want to go back. I don't want to be in the States. I don't want to be there. Like, I know that's not where I'm happy. That's not where I feel comfortable anymore. And then it's like you're sitting on that 20 hours on the plane trying to fly around the world, and it just sucks. So yeah, I totally get that.
So you got in with some fighters, and then the gym that you got in, is that the same gym you're at now? Like the one that you started at?
So I was at Sasakino for 4 years, and then so last year was the 4 year mark, and then COVID happened.
Mm-hmm.
But even before COVID happened, there were just some things going on with the gym where I was like, all right, I probably need to change where I'm training, because at that time, and I would even say now, I was like full-time training, and I was pretty serious as a fighter. Like initially I came with just like, oh, I just wanted to learn and like mm-hmm. trick the fight as much as I can. And then eventually it was just like, oh, I want to win some belts and I want to, you know, get into this promotion or that promotion. So I took my training really seriously, and then I just felt like I needed to make a change. So then in July, I started training full-time at PK Senchai.
Yeah. I saw that you're training there now. I've trained at Yako a bunch of times. Guys coming through there. It's for the fighters, you know? Like, they get their training there, and then when you go there, you're kind of just in the area of the fighters. It's weird. Like, that's not where I would go if I wanted, like, a camp. You know, like...
Yeah.
It's cool to visit there. Like, I've trained in and out of there. I trained with Sing Dom and Manichai and things like that. Like, I go in, and when I go to a place, and I tell people this all the time, that like when I go and find a fighter that I want to train with, I train with them to kind of pick their brain on their specialty. So like when I went and trained with Manichai, I've trained with him twice, and I just wanted to kind of learn his style of low kick. I went and trained with like Samart just to train with a legend, same thing with Sagat and, you know, things like that. When I go to train, I just look for a good gym to train at, you know what I mean? Like that you feel like you're part of the gym. But otherwise, like when I go to Yakow, they're great. They sponsor a bunch of stuff. Like, so when I fly in, they give me all my gear. I do gear reviews and stuff for them. Go and I can train there for free when I'm in Bangkok. So it's like, and I was staying in Pattaya, so I was in Bangkok like every other week, flying somewhere or going to fights or something like that. So it was really cool to at least have a gym that I could just stop in and train when I wanted to train. But so like the gym that you were at, you're more than welcome to say or not say. We've had female fighters. I had Sylvie on, you know, Sylvie, right? Yeah, I had her on. We had another girl that was more of she was a fighter, but a tourist fighter. Do you know what I mean? Down in Phuket, you know, they come in and, I mean, they legitimately fight, they train, but it's definitely a different atmosphere on the soil in Phuket. So we've had different accounts of a female fighter's perspective on going into a Thai gym, things that happen. Like, what is your experience been like going into a Thai gym, being accepted by the trainers? Or we've heard a lot of things about, you know, the women with trainers, that the trainers won't take them serious, it takes a long time to warm up to a trainer and things like that, which it does happen with men too, but it seems to be harder for the women to get in. So like just your general experience when you got from being okay in training in the States, because we're kind of more inclusive because it's not strict, you know, we're not like this is our way, and then you jumped into like the motherland of Muay Thai where they do things like the same way
different. Well, a lot of it just has to do with the cultural expectations of men versus women, right? Like a lot of women, they're not expected to, you know, be like physically strong or like to do certain things or like want to be a fighter. So then like for me and maybe for Sylvie and maybe the other girl that you talked to, for us to be one foreigners and women, they find that those two factors to be kind of novel in a way, especially when you take it in terms of like, oh, they're not just foreign women, but they also are professional fighters. So then, whereas like if you just take a foreigner who is a professional fighter, they're like, oh, he's a foreigner, so there's a language gap, but we know how to train him because we could just train him like one of the Thai boys. But then with the women, because there's a whole economical thing behind it as well. Like a lot of gyms, it's not by accident that they don't have any sponsored Thai female fighters. So just because of that, a lot of trainers, they don't have a lot of experience working with women and training with women. So then the only ones that they do have experience training with are either the foreign women that come on vacation or just come and go, or two, the local women that just come for fitness and to train and work out. And this is usually what they expect when they see women. They're just like, oh, she's just here for fitness, to lose weight, to have a good time.
Right.
And then it's very, very rare that they meet a foreign professional fighter that's a woman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So because of those factors, it just makes things, it just layers on things that make it a little bit more difficult to be taken seriously when you're new to a gym. So then, like, even though I was at Sasakino for 4 years, the only person that really took me seriously the entire time was my trainer, Momo. Like, he invested in me. He was just like, oh, I don't care if she's a girl, I'll train her like exactly like the guys. And he really spared nothing at me. Whereas, like, some of the other trainers, they're like, ask, oh, how much are you making from this fight? Oh, okay. Like, that would be the first question to me. And then, like, depending on my answer, if my trainer wasn't there, sometimes they'd just hold 3 rounds for me, sometimes even less. And sometimes they'd be like, oh, just go hit the bag, or you know what, because there's no incentive for them to do more, because they're like, oh, what's in it for me money-wise?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if you see someone, like, a superstar from the gym, you know, he's making, like, at least 10, 20 times more than I am, so they're just like, oh, yeah, we're actually gonna really train him. So that's the money part. The other part is, it's also, like, the size, gender issue. Like, just generally speaking, most women are smaller and not as strong as most men are. So then a lot of times they don't want to put us with men in the clinching and the sparring and stuff, because they're like, oh, this is not going to help our male fighters. So a lot of times women are excluded from doing these things. And also because they're used to interacting with women that are into doing these things, they just kind of assume that all women are not wanting to do it. So then, like, sometimes you have to ask.
Yeah.
And sometimes it feels like you're begging for, like, what a man could just walk in and just get automatically, you know?
Yeah.
And it's simple things like clinching and sparring, and then there's the ego thing. If you're a woman, same size or not, and you're technically better than any male at the gym in terms of technique or skill or whatever, then they feel really weird about that, and then they might make excuses why they don't want to clinch or spar with you. Not today, my leg hurts. You know, shit like that.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, we're all here to learn, and then I don't feel like a lot of us, we come in with the ego. We just want to learn and be taken seriously, because we put in the same amount of work as our male counterparts. So there's definitely a lot of hurdles to jump through, and like, in the beginning, it's kind of like you just kind of have to go with whatever it is that they've kind of put on top of you. But then you have to work even harder to show them that you're serious, because if their default impression or if their default thinking is, oh, she's not serious, so I'm not going to take her seriously, then you have to work harder to come over that hurdle and be like, no, I am serious, and this is why you should take me seriously. Some trainers will never get that. It'll never get into their brain. But then some trainers, after a little bit, they see how consistent you are, they see how much you're willing to put in the work, and they're like, okay, and then they start meeting you halfway. But again, it ultimately depends on the trainer, how old school the gym is, what the gym itself. So, yeah.
How was your experience, like, personally? I mean, obviously you don't have to address it personally if you don't want to, but, like, coming from the States and you arrive at this camp and they say, oh, we need your help, because, you know, they needed your help for the social media, and you say, oh, yeah, I'm a fighter, and then, like, how did that play out when you first got there?
Well, when I first got there, it was, like, I just did whatever the high professional fighters do.
Mm-hmm.
Did, you know, training, like, waking up at 5 a.m. I did the same amount of running they did, training twice a day. And then I remember all the trainers going, like, being really, like, surprised that I was doing all of this. They were like, oh, wow, she's very disciplined. But I'm just like, oh, but I'm just doing whatever your Thai fighters are doing, because I'm here. Like, this is what I came for. So, but for them, it's just like, well, why is she doing this? Yeah. And then like even through my years there were just some trainers that just never took me seriously. And then there was my trainer who just was with me from the get-go. I've dropped into some gyms where they grouped all the women in one group, regardless of size, skill, and then they would group the men properly by like size, right? And so then when the men got to spar and stuff, it was well matched up. And then when the women sparred, it was like, you didn't know what you're gonna get.
Female go.
Yeah. So it's just like, you know, I got this really tall girl who's never sparred in her life, and then I, like, you know, I wasn't hitting her hard, and she was like, so then sometimes trainers will look over, they don't know what's going on, they're like, oh, stop hitting her hard. I'm like, I'm not hitting her hard, she has no business sparring, and the fact that you would throw all of us in together, that's not fair to any of us. It's not fair to her, she's not learning anything, it's not fair to me, because I'm not learning anything. We're all the guys, they're getting all the benefits from this, you know? And because I can understand Thai, like I hear what they're saying about the women sometimes. So then, there are a lot of these balls anywhere you go. But then a lot of the narrative is always like, oh, just make them tired. It's never like, oh, teach them anything. At least if you're new, you know. So then, like this gym that I went to that separated the women just by gender. I heard him over talking about like, oh yeah, just make them do like Superman punches and stuff, and then it'll be. It's just like, how can you just automatically assume that about all the women? Like, you don't know anything about us. You don't know how long we've been training. If any of us are fighters, who aren't fighters, and who actually is going to do a Superman punch? Like, do you tell any of your Thai fighters to do that? Just like, five times in a row, like. You know, like, I had been in the country long enough where I just knew it was complete bullshit. And also, I understood what they were saying. So it was just like, you know, this is like just outright discriminatory. You know, you're just like, oh, no, we're not going to take them seriously. And this is how we're going to do it. And then I've been to one of the gyms up in, like, Isan, where in Bangkok gyms, it's pretty normal to just step in between the ropes in training with your women. And they're like, whatever. But then, like, sometimes in the gym, Isan, like, I was told, hey, you can't do that. You have to go under and stuff. Yeah. And then, like, if it's their gym, like, I'm more than happy to do it. I don't fight with it, especially if I want to train. It's like, okay, whatever. I have to roll under the ropes when I fight anyway. But it's just, like, things like that just add another obstacle to training, you know? It's like, and instead of, like, being paired up with a guy my size, I always get paired up with kids who are, like, 7 years old. I'm like, dude, you're half my size. Why am I training with you?
Yeah.
Oh, because can't clinch with one of the teenagers or something. So it's, you know, it's always, I just always feel like I'm constantly having to prove my value and prove my worth and prove my experience no matter how long I've been here.
Yeah. I see with more people that I've talked to, like females that are actually, they're not necessarily going on the, I don't know how you would really call it, like the tourist circuit, like fighting Bangala or, you know, the stadiums that all the tourists go and fight at. Like, the females that I've talked to that go and they actually go out to these other gyms and these other promotions and things like that, they have that sort of, like, it's so much harder to make everything work. Where have you... The promotion you're fighting for now is what, hardcore?
So then it's Channel 8 has two promotions. They have Super Chan and Muay Hardcore. So recently, like, my past fights in the past year have been on either of those two.
Is that the same as that was, like, Muay Extreme or whatever it was called?
So Muay Extreme was the very first show in Thailand to do Muay Thai with MMA gloves.
Right, and then they I've been there.
Fall out. And then Muay Hardcore, like, maybe, like, a year later, was, like, a separate promotion that was just like, oh, we're going to fill the void.
Gotcha. Yeah. How do you like fighting with the smaller gloves?
It's fun. Yeah. I mean, it's the sport side is definitely not anything like even like entertainment Muay Thai. It's just different. It's just like go, 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 go. It's just purely action. You know, you just have to, it doesn't even matter if you don't throw a kick. You know what I mean? Just go.
Yeah, that's what I've noticed watching those fights is it's not the stadium fighting. You know,
it's not even 3-round Muay Thai regular gloves. It's just pure entertainment.
Just knock that person out.
Yeah. It's just so they could get more views on TV. That being said, you do see a lot better views. There's less padding in front of your face. And when you do land anything, it's solid.
Yeah. It's
solid. You land a punch, it's solid. You land an elbow, it goes right through. But the same thing can happen to you.
Well, that's why, like, even training MMA, we never trained. Like, you never threw punches with 4-ounce gloves. Like, that just, you know, you would train MMA, you'd wear 16-ounce gloves for striking still. So where have you fought? Like, when did you start fighting in Thailand? Like, how long were you there that you, like, got into?
I think my first trip, I trained for, like, 2 weeks, and then I had to fight at Asiatique, which is, like, this tourist venue near the Riverside in Bangkok. And they had fights there, like, every day. But it was just, like, every day they had, like, 2 or 3 bouts. It was just,
okay.
It's, like, one of those places where you throw your name in, and then within a week you'll get matched up with someone. No weigh-ins, 3 rounds, you know. And for someone who's in Bangkok and it's like your first few fights, that's usually the place where you fight at. So I fought at Asiatique a bunch of times, and then I think a couple months later we went up to Isan. So I went to Chaiapum a couple times to fight. I went to Koh Lat to fight. So those experiences were interesting because they're all outdoors. They have all these gamblers. It's really noisy, you know, there's just dirt, bugs everywhere, but those are actually my favorite places to fight, because it's just so raw, you know,
yeah.
Just not the pomp and, you know, whatever.
Well, that's the thing is, like, when you're trying to describe someone that's watched Muay Thai or even been to any Muay Thai event, even Lion Fight, whatever, in the States, and then you tell them about going to one of the big stadiums in Thailand. If you've ever been to Raja or Lumpini or whatever, it's another world. The energy that you feel energy. Like, it's insane. And you can't, you tell somebody that and they're like, oh, so it's cool. No, you don't get it.
No, the first time I went to Lumpini, I remember, forget about the fight. I was watching the gamblers. You know, the gamblers were entertaining. They're just like their emotion, like the way they interact with the fighters, and there's just something going on, like the shouting, like some of them, you know, you're just like walking around being all excited, and like, you know, them communicating with each other. You have the bookies with like the 10 phones, like
yeah. I had gone to Raja a bunch of times, and I was like, why haven't I gone to Lumpini? And every time I would try to go Lumpini, everybody's like, it's so far, because it was the new stadium.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how far could it be? I've gone everywhere in Bangkok. And then you think like, you've gone everywhere, and it's far. And I got in a cab, and he's like, you're going to Lumpini? And I was like, yeah, the fights are. He's like, oh, okay. And it's like 2-hour cab ride or whatever. But when I got there, they tried to pull the whole VIP thing with me. And I'm like, no, I'm not paying for VIP. And he's like, well, there's no seats. And I'm like, I know there's seats.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, there's only standing. I said, I'll stand. And he goes, okay. And he, like, the cabbie, like, was, I don't speak Thai, not enough to understand what he was saying. So he charged me, and I go in, and I ended up with just the bettors. Like, it was the only foreigner with all the Thai bettors. And, like, within a few, matches, they were talking with me, and but, like you were saying, but I was sitting there on the cement bleachers with only Thai, like, the bettors in Lumpini, and, like, that was a whole nother experience, because first they're looking at me all weird, like, why the hell are you over here? And then after that, like, they're joking with you, and, like, they're trying to get you to bet with them and all that stuff. I'm like, I don't understand what the hell you're talking about betting, so I'm not giving you money. Right? I'm like, I have to watch myself on the streets some places, so I'm not even, like, you guys are yelling stuff, and then, like, because when I learned somewhat about betting, I'm like, how do the odds change, like, all the time?
Yeah, and like, they're just saying the odds as the fight is going. It's
yeah,
crazy.
I'm like, how does this work? And they're like, once you lock in a bet, you've locked in your bet and all that weird stuff. It's like, I don't get it. I'm not trying to play that game. So, like, what is, like, ups and downs, your experiences in Thailand, being over there? Like, in general, like, what, you know, what are some of the things that you wish didn't happen, or, like, just some of your adventures, you know?
I don't think anything, like, I mean, obviously not everything here has been perfect, but right. also the bad things that have happened, I just take them as learning experiences, because if they didn't happen, then I wouldn't know a bunch of stuff. I think the biggest downside to, like, being here long-term is just, like, you feel really lonely, because, like, you know, your group of friends is, like, your group of, like, long-term close friends, they're not here. And then the people that you meet that come through the camp, they stay for a few weeks maybe.
Yeah.
And every now and then you meet one person that's like, oh, I'm going to stay here for 2 or 3 months. And maybe once a year, once in a blue moon, there's a person who's like, oh, I'm going to be here for 4 or 5 months. But that, like, rarely ever happens. And then, but the thing is, they all eventually leave. And then you're like, oh, okay, I'm by myself again. So that feeling of, like, loneliness, it gets really overwhelming sometimes. Like, sometimes when you have someone there to, like, hang out with and, like, hey, let's go get something to eat, it helps a lot, especially, like, every day it's just the same thing. You get up at the same time, you go running, you go do this and that and that, and especially if you're in a fight camp, you're just tired and you're just, like, in your head all the time. So then just to, like, have someone there to break out the monotony, it helps a lot. I mean, you don't always have that luxury. And I come to really appreciate a lot of the women that I've met here, especially the ones that have stayed a little bit longer. Like, I become close with, like, pretty much all of them. It's just interesting to meet, I think, in this stage of my time, career, and life, to meet other women who are here for different reasons or the same reasons that I have. Because before, it was just hard for me to, like, growing up, it was just hard for me to become friends with girls who were, like, interested in doing sports or anything like that. Or even my friend group, when I started training, they were like, why would you want to do that? No, not interested. I think we'll rather go partying or something. And that wasn't me, you know. So then for me to meet, like, people from, like, all walks of life, and we have this common interest, and just meeting people from all over the world, I think that's definitely been, like, one of the up there with the whole, with the Hall of Fighting and all of that.
Yeah.
Getting my views open up to the rest of the world without even having to go there, you know?
Yeah, no, I think Thailand did that huge for me. It's just, and there's so much that kind of just put me at ease in life about being over there, being able to talk to people, strangers, and there's not like this, I mean, you're from New York. You can't just say hi to a woman in New York. You know,
I was trying to tell someone, like, it's really strange when I try to explain to locals, like, here you could talk to someone about an ulterior motive, you know, or someone can talk to you and you can be like, oh, they just want to say hi. It's not because they're trying to sell me something or, you know, the sob story so they could ask for $20 from you, you know, shit like that. Here it's like at the park, it's, they're saying hi to you because they see you every day. You're like, hey, what's up? And that's it. Nothing else. You know, it's just, and then, like, sometimes people don't get it. They're like, what? But not everyone here is, like, nice and friendly. I'm like, yeah, but comparatively to where I'm.
I grew up in upstate New York, in Rochester. And so, like, I mean, everybody's like, oh, Rochester. I'm like, that's up north. I mean, yeah, it was a big city, too, though. Like, we had a lot of bad stuff there. I mean, it wasn't New York City, but yeah, you didn't just randomly say hi to people and things like that. And then when you can walk into a store and, like, I can say hello to a woman with no, like, I'm not trying to do anything. Mm-hmm. And they say hello and you go about your day, or you could have a conversation, or you could ask about some food. It was just like, it's so, like, refreshing. You can kind of relax. And, but when you were saying about being down, about being alone, that's what I found that a lot when I was there, like, after 4 or 5 months, because I had gone, I got a condo, I do everything on my own. So I ended up traveling. I would travel. I was over in Cambodia going to visit. I have a friend that has a gym over there, Vietnam, but all by myself. So it was like, all right. And then I would get back to the condo and I'm still alone. And I'm like, man. And it was really, it's kind of dark. And I've said it a few times, is I felt like, obviously, I split. I left everyone in the States, right? So I was out doing my own thing. And you think that you keep track of everybody because we have this fake social media, not fake because I know that's what you do, but I mean, so we have that connection that we think we have with people. When you're physically not there anymore, mm-hmm. people tend to just go on with their lives and you're not part of that anymore. And it's hard. Like for me, it was like, this is the same as being dead. You know, like that was what was in my head is like, so when somebody dies, you kind of just keep doing what you're doing, you know, like obviously you would miss them or whatever. But and I was like, I've gone to the other side of the world on my own journey and people reach out less and less over time. You know, you don't see the same people. It's funny as I had some people that would come over and visit. But other than that, you're like I lived in Las Vegas for 8 years. I had probably less friends visit me in Las Vegas than had visited me in Thailand. So, but that loneliness, that was something hard to deal with until I really kind of grasped what was going on. And I'm like, oh, well, I mean, I kind of brought this on myself. I'm out here doing my own thing. What do I expect them to do? You know, but yeah, waking up and being like, oh, I had that person that I went and talked to every day was only here for 30 days. Or that we yeah. hung out or things like that. That was like a big thing. People that go over on their the visa exempt and things like that, they don't realize when they make that big jump to go, I'm going to live there, because that's what I did. It's like I would go for two months and then I was like, I want to live there. So when I finally went over and I was there, you don't realize it's just things change because now you're in normal life again.
Yeah, because you're not there as a tourist.
Exactly. No. Yeah.
Now it's like you're making this place your home, so you gotta get used to stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and you're doing normal things every day. You're not like that. It doesn't always have to be an adventure. Yeah. So that was a big thing too. Again, like because I was trying to see all the different gyms and all that stuff. It's like my routine was still kind of out the window. But when I was in a normal routine for a week or something, it just felt weird. And it was like, oh, but I just went through a whole day and I didn't say anything to anyone. Like not a word. I would go get food just to talk to like the food, like the people at the food stalls or something, you know, and they would talk to me. But yeah, I can understand that part. So like, what do you do now to kind of, to keep you there? Like I started doing the English teaching while I was here right before COVID hit, just because I was like, oh, when I go back, I could still make some money. And I know a lot of people are digital nomads. And then there's people, I don't know anybody that just goes over there, becomes a fighter and makes money. So no,
especially now because you're making pennies, basically.
I mean, so, okay. So wait a minute, before we even get into that. So like, what is the, because I'd like to people to understand the difference between being a woman fighter and being a man fighter. And obviously even being a man fighter coming in from a foreign fighter, you have to really be somebody to make any money.
Correct.
So like as a woman, like what's the, what is your, the gap between what you guys are making?
So then things are changing right now with like one championship and stuff, but mm-hmm. I would say from the beginning of time up until like, let's say this right now, the most, like, most women fighters make is probably 20,000. And that's, like, the ceiling. Mm-hmm. This is high, non-Thai. Whereas that's probably maybe a starting point for a lot of people, for a lot of men. That's just the starting point. And right. then for a woman, like, saying 20K, oh, that's really good. But then for a man, oh, that's really little. Because mm-hmm. the men, they're making, like, 50, 60, 70. And then, like, you got people like Sing Money, Da Wan Chai, they're making like millions off their side bets, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? So
yeah.
There's a huge disparity, and because of that disparity, that also affects the training, sponsorships,
right.
Quality of, you know, whatever. And then and that's also the reason why Thai women retire early. A lot of them retire by the time they're like 20, 21, because they're like, I just can't keep waiting around for $10 a bottom month. I might as well work in an office, you know?
Right.
Then they can go on until they're 30 because they're making 60,000 baht a month from fighting. Or
yeah.
even the ones that are just like, just stay as stadium fighters, they're making at least $30,000-$40,000, which is pretty good as compared to if they were just like a driver or like a waiter or something, you know?
Right.
So then at least that, they can support themselves, support their family. But women, $10,000 a month, I mean, they could literally be doing anything else.
Yeah. I trained with Supergirl. I went and trained with her and her dad, and they were awesome. I mean, and I mean, obviously that's a different thing. It's like their dad trained, you know, her and her sister, and her mom was there. So, I mean, those are the adventures that I love to have. Like, I went there and that was at their home. And
right,
so like,
now, right?
I got dropped off at the temple.
Oh, and you had to walk?
At night. And had no idea where I was, and I was like, and I stopped and somebody told me where to go, and they're like, yeah, walk by the canal, but like on the blocks next to the canal with the houses right here. So
yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
I was like, but like, so I went and trained with them, and like you were saying, like obviously being a house with women fighters and their family. And you know, Thai families typically stick tight together, but both of them are now moving on to one with Fairtex. So it's like there is, I think, one is helping a lot with in general just exposure to Muay Thai and things like that. But like, what are your goals? Where, like, you said you want to use like belts and things like that. You want championships and things like that. But do you have like specific ones? Like, I just had Sava-san from Petendi, and he's fighting for one now, but he still wants a Lumpini belt. And like, that's one of his main things, is he's, because he was supposed to fight for a Lumpini belt after he fought Lurdzilla when he got hurt at one. And he's like, no, that's still like one of my big goals. Do you like, so are you looking to get into the stadiums to fight for those, or like different organizations? Or
3 years ago, I won the Nine Kanaton title at 54 kilos. And then after that, I was just like, I wanted to keep challenging myself. So then on my list, I would love to fight for a WBC title, international, national, world, whatever level. I would love to get into one championship. I feel like I'm very, very close because I'm in the right place.
Yeah.
I'm training with people. There are some other belts like WMC, WMO. I mean, those are the main ones. In terms of the stadiums, I mean, women can't fight there. So Lumpini and Roger, they're just not even a question.
Yeah. Is there other belts for women that are comparable, or is it just like the federation belts?
The main ones are the federation belts, and then there's the local stadium ones. The only local stadium one that has any sort of weight to it are probably the Chiang Mai ones, because the Chiang Mai ones actually do weigh-ins.
Mm-hmm.
They actually make the fights fairly, like, the matchup good, you know, as compared to the Phuket ones or...
Yeah.
You know, so...
Yeah, like Sylvie was telling me, she's like, I always fight bigger people, and it's like, you know, she fights so often, she's like, I don't care. Like, all right. But I guess if you want fights, you make sacrifices.
I think my first 6 or 7 months I was fighting like every 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And then there was a point, I think a few months before I left the Filipino, I fought twice in 1 week before, a few times. It was just because like I wasn't getting on these big shows, so I just fought wherever I wanted to. And then if my trainer was okay with it, then he was like, okay, you fight today, you fight like 3 days from now. If you don't have to cut weight, then it's like, all right, why not?
Yeah.
And also, lucky for me is like after I fight, my shins aren't banged up. You know, like I might be like kind of sore like my body, but my shins are never banged up, which is like a huge problem for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I can kick, walk, and my shins are fine. So then for me to just go into another one, no problem.
All right, so now, how are you sustaining being in Thailand? Because this is a big thing that people, everybody wants to go, but then they're like, they'll go on their vacations, and then they're like, oh, I gotta go home, I'm out of money.
Yeah.
Because they were at Bangalore every night.
Yeah. As soon as I got here, I went to a nearby mall, because all the malls in Thailand, they have like a floor or dedicated section to like education stuff. So I went to this English tutoring center. It was basically like, I need a job. So then I was kind of hired there on the spot to just teach weekends. So then in the beginning, that's all I did. I was just teaching English on weekends. So very, very part-time, very casual. And then after that, during that time, because I was teaching for 3.5 years, I started writing for Muay Thai Guy. So that's how I got into content writing. So he was paying me per article. And then after that, I was just doing more writing work. And then I just took like odd jobs. Like I remember I did a lot of proofreading. I did some video editing work. Like I didn't know how to edit videos. And I was like, I'll learn. So I just did like basically video editing stuff. What else did I do? I got a social media job for this fight. Gear company, and then he's like, can you take photos? I was like, I'll get a camera when I learn. And so I borrowed my friend's like really like expensive camera that took decent pictures, got paid by the hour to take pictures and like edit them. So, you know, just did a bunch of stuff just to like kind of keep afloat. And then it wasn't until like recently that I was just kind of like, all right, enough of this like living month to month shit, you know what I mean? Especially with like the lockdown and stuff. Yeah. Before, it was like, oh yeah, you're training full time, and then like it's hard to like keep up with like a part time job that's regular and stuff. So then for me, it was just like, all right, this is the best I can do. But then with like COVID and stuff, I was just like, all right, I need to do more. So then I picked up like freelance like subtitling work. So then the company I work for, they get vendors, certain vendors that have TV shows or movies or TV series, and then so someone translates them, and like I pretty much read the translation and make sure that it's like in good English. I don't teach anymore, so I do that. I do social media management, and I run my blog, Wayne, and then I get some Patreon supporters that way. So those are my main sources of income, and I also freelance as a writer. So then people will contact me if they need content for their website. It doesn't have to be Muay Thai related. Because I've learned a lot about like SEO and stuff. It's good to just kind of branch out, because if you're just in the same niche all the time, there's only so many people within such a small niche that it's just hard to find work.
Yeah, definitely. Like SEO is something that is like, it might as well be witchcraft to me. Because people like you that know it don't tell people like me that want to know it.
There's so many resources. I can give you all the services you need.
That'd be great, because it, like I've tried to figure it out, and then when you look up somebody, they're like, oh yeah, SEO. Or even if like you try to find YouTube channels, and YouTube channels want you to buy a program from them, and you're like, I need to understand it, because it's really not rocket science. I just, if I could get my mind around it, like you, I learned how to edit my own videos. You know, I started taking photography. Like, I just bought a camera when I went out to Thailand. I took some really amazing pictures that I thought, when I would post them, people are like, you took that? I'm like, yeah, you know, of people, of the, you know, just the buildings and things like that. And it's like, so yeah, I like to just find things. But like for my website and stuff like that, people are like, I don't remember who it was, but somebody's like, oh, you need SEO, and I'll get those stupid emails, you know, like, oh, we checked your website. I'm like, I know. Like, you're not telling me anything, you know, like you have too much information on certain pages, all that good stuff. But yeah, SEO, I think you guys are, you're super sneaky.
There's so many methods.
Well, I know, but you keep them, it's like the Freemasons, like you guys have to keep all the secrets.
I'll send you the research later. It's not
so, like, what are your plans? So I mean, obviously COVID hit. I had some friends. I knew one kid that was from Mass. I'm in New Hampshire right now, and my sisters, I'm stuck here. So I knew a kid that was from Mass, and he was gone for 2 weeks, and he ended up stuck there for 7 months in Phuket. And so, like, how did you were training, obviously, and then what happened there? Did like everything just shut down like they're doing now? Like, with, I mean, you're in a cafe, there's nobody's wearing a mask, so
yeah. So then last year when it happened, it was just like things kind of shut down in segments, but it all happened pretty quickly. It was like, yeah, first like beauty salons were shut down, and then literally like a few days later gyms were shut down, and then like a few days later all the parks were shut, and then it was like there was a curfew and it was this, and so all this happened like relatively quickly. So then the last time there was a lockdown, it was you were just pretty much forced to stay home because it's like you couldn't go to the mall to walk around.
Yeah.
You couldn't go to a cafe because you weren't allowed to do dine-in, only take out. You couldn't go work out because all the gyms were closed, all the parks were closed. So it's just like, where are you going to go? So I fucking stayed in my apartment for like ages, man. And
yeah.
Like you said, there were days when I just went not talking to anyone, not even through the phone or whatever, until it was like picking up my like grab food order or like going to order food, you know? It's just like, this is pathetic. But what else could be done, you know? Like, there was no traveling, nothing. So it was like, that was it. So then when that happened, it was like, obviously I wasn't training. I was trying to run like in my little area, but then after a while I was like, just
run in circles in the living room.
I would go downstairs and then like inside where the gym is, but there's like this housing area, so I would just run in the housing area, because like from the beginning to where the gym was like a good 700 meters. So if I ran around, then it would be like, oh, okay, this is like a decent loop, you know? So I would just do that like every evening, but there came a certain point where it's just like, what is the point of this?
Yeah.
So then, what I did was I spent a lot of my time just working on my blog and trying to keep busy that way, trying to look for more freelance work. I mean, during that time, everyone was trying to look for more work because everyone like lost a job, so I didn't really have a lot of luck with that. But so I just poured a lot of my energy into like writing blog articles and doing research, stuff like that. And it was just kind of like, I went through my phases like everyone. It was first like, no, I gotta stay in shape just in case, you know, whatever. And then you just kind of accept like, this is the situation and you just gotta do what you can with it, rather than just like being like, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this. But it's just like, all right, I gotta just do what I can. And obviously what I can't do is train. So I stopped thinking about it, you know? So that's really how I got through it. It's just, I just took my focus away from the training and just put it towards like developing my blog more, furthering some of my career skills, being open to like take on more work and stuff. So then when the gym did open, I was like, all right, it's time to move so I can go to the other gym that I want to train at. So I moved and then I started training again. But then, like, because of that whole experience, it also made me shift my way of thinking. So it was just like, yeah, I can still do the training, but at the same time, it's still important to do these other things outside of training. Don't just keep training. Like, you gotta do other stuff to, like, just keep yourself, like, mentally healthy. So then, at the beginning of the year, when they were like, oh, we gotta close all the gyms again because of all the hundreds of thousands of outbreaks, I didn't feel as, like, shocked and as down as I thought I would. Like, I was like, oh, that sucks, I can't train again. But I was already prepared from what happened last time. So it was like subconsciously, I already knew what I had to do. I was like, all right, well, I'm gonna put all my energy somewhere else. Yeah.
What was the gym that you were at before PK?
Titong Pinaw.
In Bangkok?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then you were living by that gym?
Yeah.
Like, and then now So now you live near PK or no?
Yeah.
Convenient.
it's so easy to find places here.
Yeah.
That once your like lease or whatever is up, there's really no reason for you to have to drive an hour, 30 minutes. You know, you could live next to wherever it is you need to work and I need to be at. And if you do work online, then it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there's a million condos to rent. Nobody's been there for a year.
Because they can't get anyone.
Yeah. So what's next? I mean, do you have, like, plans after things somewhat go back to normal? What are you trying to...
So then gyms recently started open. They opened up again on the 22nd, and there are some fights starting up in February, but just for Channel 3. And then I heard that all the other fights might start in March. So then it seems like some of the fighters are back in gyms and training again, but not everyone's there. Gyms are not fully staffed. and they don't need to be if not all the fighters are there. So right now I'm just working with my trainer a few days a week, and I'm putting a lot more of my focus on just developing like my career skills as a social media manager and with the SEO stuff, just because like I think a lot of people when they become fighters, they just kind of like, I want to be a fighter, but then they don't have plan B, plan C, plan D, because you can't be a fighter forever, you know, and God forbid something happens to you and you don't even get to do that.
Right. Yeah. You don't know that something doesn't happen in that next fight.
Or in your next fight camp, or you walking down the road, you know, anything.
Well, definitely in Thailand, walking down the road.
Yeah.
Or on that motorbike taxi.
Yeah. So like, especially since I've never been someone who can depend on my fight purse, and I've never been someone who is like, oh yeah, my fight purse is going to get me through the fight. It's never been the case. But now it's just kind of like, well, I don't, there's no fight coming up. I don't need to train every single day. Yeah. When there's no one else at the gym, you know? So I'm just like, I'm going to put my energy into something useful. So then, like, when the day comes and I'm like, well, I don't want to fight anymore, or I need to put my energy into other stuff, the option is there for me, and it's not going to be such a huge struggle for me.
So you said you feel like you're close to getting to one. Like, UFC is, like, I have friends in the UFC, and managers, and there's so much more that plays into it, and it seems like one, obviously some people have managers, but they're dealing with a lot of different cultures that, like, a manager like we have in the States isn't the key person into getting people into, like, one. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, being represented by a big company isn't what's gonna, you know, make sure that you get the good deal in one. They're bringing in a lot of people that are from smaller gyms in Thailand that are amazing fighters. Like, so what is the process that you think or that you've started to go through to prepare to do that?
So the thing with one is because the circuit here, I wouldn't say it's a small circuit, but then the people who are well known in the circuit, they're well known for a reason, and that pool is very small. And for you to stay in that pool, you have to be relevant and you have to keep fighting.
Yeah.
So then, like, so the people who are not relevant to that pool, who are famous, Senchai, Wokao, why are they not relevant? Because their skills are just not up to par, or their
How dare you?
No. I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying, like they're not active and they're not challenging themselves to the point where. Because one is not just going to throw, like,
right,
a tomato can to any one of them, because that's just not how they do things. They want to make exciting fights, well-matched up. Not like, yeah, Thai fights. You know? Thai right. fight is just like, yeah, here, beat up this corner.
Yeah.
So then, like, those kind of people are not in the pool. But then, like, the people who are always active in the stadium and stuff, like Rotan, Hedam, and stuff, they get into one because they might not have, like, a huge, like you said, management team representing them. There might just be stadium fighters, but then one really makes the mission to, like, take the top fighters from the sport.
Yeah.
Because they really understand the Muay Thai scene. You yeah. know, they're not like a company that's only in the West, and they're like, oh, we're just gonna pick everyone who's well known. They actually are really well versed with the Thai scene. Mm-hmm. So they're like, oh, this person is what's hot now in Thailand, and this person deserves to fight in life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then that's generally what I've seen, how they pick who gets it. And because they pay so much better than the stadiums can, the fighters are more than willing to sign over to one. This is like their dream, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
For like, it's about the money for them.
Yeah.
It's not really about anything else. It's about the money, and because of the money and because of all these great fighters are in it, now there's prestige. But then it was always about the money, like, oh, I'm gonna make so much more money just fighting in one, why would I keep fighting in stadiums, you know?
Yeah.
And then you got people who are double dipping, like Rotan, he's fighting in stadiums and fighting in one. So
yeah,
like,
Pet Morakot, Pet Dam, Savas, they're all doing that. Yeah.
So within Thailand, there's like one or two people who would go to the gyms and, like, kind of negotiate contracts with Yeah, so I don't think it's as I'm looking for a right word. I'm sure it's complicated to a degree, but I also don't think it's as complicated as the MMA scene in the US,
right,
where there's a lot of more politics involved, maybe. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
It's just and more then, like, right, we want you to find one. This is the contract we offer you. You want to negotiate, sign it, go sign it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and like when I was actually at Top Team in Phuket when Lordzilla signed his contract, and he was talking to me about that, and I think he said, I want to say it was 3-3 or 4-4 with big gloves and little gloves. And he was like, yeah, I just signed with one. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. And he's a fighter that, you know, is at that other level as far as notoriety. And then he got signed over. But like you're saying, if you didn't know Muay Thai and you watched one, you'd be like, who the hell are all these people? Like, they're so skilled, but where'd they come from?
Cause... But it's great because it's like going back to what you said about one just bringing Muay Thai to a bigger stage. These are the people who deserve to be on the bigger stage.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then especially in the U.S., people are like, they think the best fighters in Muay Thai are like whoever's in like Line Fight or I'm sorry, or like, you know, whatever the local promotion is. I'm just like, okay, they're good, but you got to see these other guys that are getting no publicity.
Yeah.
You know, like, you got to see them because they are just a whole other level. And one is really...
Well, that's like saying that there's Muay Thai in UFC. And they're like, no, there's not a Muay Thai fighter in the UFC. So it's like, my buddy Khalil, he trained at Petindi, and he's a UFC fighter, and he was one of the guys that he, when he went back over and he had his next fight, he had a very Thai style, and like Joe Rogan had him on, and like it was the biggest talk because he was in Bangkok for a year. And then went back, and he had very Thai, like, the stance and rhythm and everything. And that was real popular, a topic for a while. But it's like, you hear him talk, and they're like, oh, so-and-so has a great Thai kick. And you're like, what is the Thai kick? Like, which kick is that? Like, I've heard that so many times. I'm like, I've never heard a Thai person go throw a Thai kick. You know, like, there's a different... things that happen, but it's good that, you know, you'll have an opportunity. And so you're feeling like just staying active in the scene of, you know, good fighters is what should open the door for you for that.
Yeah, I feel like because I've been here for a few years and because I've worked my way up, I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but because I'm fighting on Channel 8 and stuff like that, and I've been asked to come back so many times on Channel 8, I definitely do feel like I'm at a certain level where I am getting noticed.
Yeah. Which is, what else are you going to do? You got to get that one belt, right? Would you like to transfer over? Have you done any MMA or any jiu-jitsu training or any of that?
Some informal jiu-jitsu training, just like because when I used to do CrossFit, the head coach, he was a black belt in BJJ, so then like after class, he'd be like, oh, well, like, I'll like teach you some stuff. When I worked in, I used to be a physical therapist aide, and then we had like a patient who like tore his Achilles, and then as like a thank you, he wanted to teach me and my coworkers like at his condo. So then like he taught us a few things. So all very informal. It was fun. But I also just feel like, because you're definitely not the first person who'd asked if I ever want to go to MMA, I just feel like I've been training Muay Thai for like 8 years, over 8 years now, and I feel like I still have a lot to learn.
And right.
Start like something else. I'm like, how long is it going to get before I'm like confident in that? And by that time, it's like, how old am I going to be?
Well, the reason I ask is because all the girls that are going over to one stamp, all of them, they're getting these offers to fight MMA like after their first couple of Muay Thai fights. And it's like, is that a natural progression that you'd be open to?
Well, in the case of like Stamp and probably Supergirl, they were already set to fight MMA from the beginning. So then they were already doing the MMA training, and then because they could do all three sports within one, then right. It's just easier to sign them to the contract and find them fights and keep them active, rather than just like, oh, you can only do one or two, or just the striking, or just the MMA. So then like the people who can do all three, they definitely have some like publicity value to the organization. For the Thais, there's definitely that progression towards MMA because of the pay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, look, Loma, she's in the UFC, and she's fighting MMA. I mean, she was a Muay Thai champ, really good at Muay Thai, but she wasn't making any money doing Muay Thai, so...
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's even Chris Cyborg. I mean, she was Lion Fight and all that stuff, and then when they finally found, you know, signed her into UFC and Bellator and all that, then she started to make money. But it was like...
like the Tenko sisters, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So, like I said, anything else? I don't want to keep you too much longer, and it's midnight, and I have a teacher class at 3 a.m. So, anything else you want to promote? Your website, things. I mean, obviously, we don't have much coming up at this point that we know about. But like your website or anything else that you want to put out there and promote or anything like that.
Sure. So then my website is Muay Ying. So muay-ying.com. So if you want to, if anyone wants to keep up to date with news or just like articles about the female scene or just about training in Thailand in general, I do write a lot of articles about what it's like to be here and giving people advice, because I feel like this is information that a lot of people don't have, which is mm-hmm. also like a topic that you try to cover a lot.
Yeah.
On Instagram, it is moy.ying, and then that's a lot easier to follow with not the writing, but with like infographics and stuff like that. My athlete account was Angela Fitan, so AngelaFitan. If you want to follow my career as a professional fighter.
Perfect. I appreciate it so much for you joining me and getting your take on all of the things going on, from starting out to dealing with what we got going on now. I'd really appreciate it. Anytime. And when I get back out there, we'll meet up and go train, or I don't know, go run in Lumpini Park with the lizards. Oh yeah. That's my favorite. Angela, thank you so much, and have a wonderful day, and I will talk to you later. What's that?
Rest up.
No, we don't do that anymore. Have a good night or day. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you once again for listening to the number one combat sports podcast, the Fight Chase Muay Thai and MMA podcast. You can follow us on Fight Chase on all the social media, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, all that good stuff. And also, don't forget you can support us at any time going to the anchor.fm/fightchase, hit the support icon, and you can support us for as little as 99 cents a month. We truly appreciate it. Thank you for listening. And Kurt, don't say boom.
Boom.
Oh, it's a big kibosh! Locks out moisture, seals in freshness. Goodness!